is Jenny Kwong for Writer's Block on CJSW 90.9 FM in Calgary on Treaty 7 lands and Métis Nation of Alberta Sections 5 and 6. Today, I'm speaking with journalist Sally Armstrong about the book she co-authored, Outspoken, My Fight for Freedom and Human Rights in Afghanistan by Sima Samar with Sally Armstrong. After that, you'll hear from Kate Black about her book, Big Mall, a look at West Edmonton Mall and other large malls in the U.S., Middle East, and Asia. So let's get into it. Hi, my name is Jenny Kwong for Writer's Block on CJSW 90.9 FM in Calgary. Today, I'm speaking with Sally Armstrong about the book Outspoken by Sima Samar with Sally Armstrong. So welcome, Sally.
Thank you, Jenny. I'm glad to be with you.
And so tell me about a little bit how you started out as a journalist.
Well, I've been a journalist a very long time. I started out with a women's magazine called Canadian Living and moved on to another one called Homemakers. And then I switched to doing more news and television. And I've had a very exciting career. My beat, Jenny, is to cover conflict, but I cover it from the point of view of what happens to women and girls.
And so how do you get in touch with Sima Samar and to learn about her work over the years?
Well, that is just a great story. You know, when I heard that the Taliban had taken over Afghanistan in 1996, I thought, this is unbelievable. It's like they took them back to the Dark Ages. And I heard that one woman was defying the Taliban, that she was a medical doctor, and she was continuing to treat women at her clinics and continuing to run schools for girls. And the Taliban had threatened to kill her if she didn't shut them down. So as a journalist, that's the story I wanted. But no one would give me her name. They kept saying, oh, no, they'd kill her. We can't let her name out. So finally, one woman in Lahore, Pakistan, a woman called Farida Shaheed, she said to me, well, come on over here and we'll talk about it. Well, Jenny, you're a journalist. I'm a journalist. You know what budgets are. And did I have the budget to go all the way to Pakistan and not find the woman? In any case, I went. And all day long, this woman kept giving me the ABCs of militant fundamentalism, but not the name of the woman I wanted to interview. At 5 o'clock in the afternoon, when she was closing up her office, I thought, my publisher's going to kill me. I've come all this way. I still haven't found the woman. And then Farida Shaheed said, there's a flight to Quetta tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. You should be on it. Someone will meet your plane. Well, I mean, it was pretty mysterious, but I took the plane. I landed in Quetta. I walked into the arrivals lounge, and a woman was walking toward me, smiling, and she was putting out her hand to shake hands with me. And she said, you must be Sally. I'm Sima Samar. I believe you've been looking for me. And that's the first time I met her. And I've been doing stories about her as a journalist ever since. That's 25 years ago.
And so tell me about her journey from a doctor to a minister in the interim government.
Well, Sima was still a doctor. But while she was running her clinics and opening schools for girls, because she realized that no country can run successfully with no education for their girls, she became an activist. But you know what, Jenny? The truth is, as we write about in the book, she was an activist when she was a little girl. You know, she came from a polygamous family, and pretty early on, she figured out this was not fair. What was happening to her mother was not fair. It was the culture, and it's the way it was, but she knew it wasn't fair. And then other things began to happen in the village. The boys would ride bicycles. Most of the girls did not, but she did. She just took her brother's bike, and she rode the bike. So she began to gather, as a young girl, the facts to support her activism, and her. She decided she had to change all of this. And even as she was older and went to medical school, she did not comply with the rules entirely for girls. And people admired her for it. And she began to have a following. You know, by the time I met her, and I met her in March of 1997, she had a huge following. She really was the warrior for the women of Afghanistan.
And so her work continues today as a doctor and continuing with being...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
And so her work continues today as a doctor and an activist.
Well, today she's living in near Boston in the United States, where she's been evacuated. And she is a visiting scholar at Tufts University. But you know, she's still, of course, she's still an activist, but she's still gathering people around her to tell people how to take action, what to do to make change, how to get their country back. So she's appearing on a lot of programs. She's doing a lot of podcasts. And of course, for the last 2 years, she's been writing a book with me.
And so what was it like to piece together all this, the years that she's been working in
that... I'm sorry, Jenny, I can't make out what you're saying.
And so I guess what's the situation in Afghanistan right now?
What is the status of Afghanistan right now?
Yes.
Well, I'm sure you read the newspapers. It is absolutely dreadful. This is the worst place in the world to be a woman. Always has been, actually. But consider, in Afghanistan today, you can't go to school if you're a woman. You can't go to work. You can't appear in public. You have no rights whatsoever because you're a woman. It is so punishing. You know, when you think about it, Seema Samar was the Minister of Women's Affairs the very first time they ever had a woman, a Ministry of Women's Affairs. Today, that very ministry has been changed into the Ministry of Vice and Virtue. And that is a hateful mandate that hurts women. You know, in Afghanistan today, hope has been replaced with fear. And day after day, the Taliban issue new decrees to basically erase women from public life and punish them for being female.
And so with the return of the Taliban, I guess...
I'm really having trouble understanding what you're saying.
With the return of the Taliban, what are the steps being taken to...
Well, nothing. This is the problem. The world is doing basically nothing except denying them admittance into any international forum refusing to accept them as the government of Afghanistan. But you know, I'll tell you another thing. We tend to look at Afghanistan today as though the 20 years the international community was there was a failure. But you know, when you consider what happened during that 20 years, life expectancy in Afghanistan dropped from, it was 47 years, and it is now 63 years. So it is completely turned around. Maternal mortality dropped by 50%. The children went back to school, both boys and girls. And nation building began. You know what, Jenny, that's not a failure. That's a miracle. What Afghanistan needs today is another miracle, because the world is standing by. We're witnessing gender apartheid and gross human rights violations, and we don't know what to do about it. But the problem is, this kind of attitude the Taliban has is spreading. It's spreading dangerously throughout the region, throughout Asia, and indeed, it's coming to America. This business of taking people's rights away from them. So it's something we are all witnessing in Afghanistan, and no one knows apparently what to do about it.
And so with this book, there's another new generation who wasn't around during 9/11, and so...
Sorry, I can't hear you, Jenny.
So, what this book, there's a new generation who wasn't around during 9/11 and the events surrounding it. So, what do you hope readers get from this book?
Well, I don't know what you said, but I'm going to presume that you just said, what about the new generation born after 9/11?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yes.
And what about them? Well, you know what, Jenny? It's hard to argue when you've got a gun to your head. The Taliban will kill you if you don't do what they say. So all of these bright young people who are building a brand new Afghanistan have either left the country, or they're in hiding, or they're kowtowing to this de facto government.
And I guess it will take another generation of activism to get beyond
well,
this point.
Well, actually, I think if you're assuming that a new generation is going to change it, I think I suggest you read a little history. Just because you're a new generation doesn't mean you can stop people who have hijacked their religion for political opportunism and are willing to kill people at every turn. That's not a generational issue. It certainly takes young people to rebuild a society. But I think what you need to understand is if the leader of the society has decided that you have no rights, you have no right to speak, you have no right to be out on the street, you have no right to go to school, to work, it takes more than being a young person to turn that problem around. It takes the international community to come together and figure out how to alter this catastrophe. And that's what it is. It's a catastrophe. People are dying every day in Afghanistan because of the government.
So what is next for this book?
What is next for the book?
Yeah.
Yes, the book will be published on February the 27th in most countries. In some, it's coming out around the world. In some countries, it's coming out during the first week of March. And in fact, today I had a very interesting letter from, I think it was the Australian publisher, asking for permission to do a version of the book in large print. In other words, to make it more accessible to people with perhaps eye issues, visibility issues, visual issues is what I'm trying to say, and to make it in larger print for accessibility. And I was so excited to hear about that because this is a story that needs to be told. This is a cautionary tale. You know, this is a story that tells you what happens when leaders decide to hijack a religion for political opportunism. And this is what happens to the people that are stuck in that horrible situation. They, when deception and misinformation about culture and religion and gender overrule the history and ultimately the will of the people. And this book, this story tells what happens. So indeed, it is a cautionary tale. I'm sorry, what did you say?
Oh, this is the end of the interview. Any more to say before we wrap up?
No, you said this is the end of the interview. Do you have anything else I want to say?
Yes.
Well, I want to tell you I'm delighted to speak to you. I wish I was there in Calgary. I gather you're at the university. I've spoken at that university many times, and I'm very grateful to have an opportunity to share the news about this book with students, because it is students that are so well aware of the value of human rights. And it's students that know that when you claw back human rights, you destroy everything. You destroy your economy. You destroy your country. And so that's why I really believe it is a cautionary tale about what happens when people don't pay attention to human rights.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking with Sally Armstrong about the book, Outspoken, My Fight for Freedom and Human Rights in Afghanistan by Sima Samar with Sally Armstrong. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hi, this is Jenny again. For some background information, these are the books I read in preparation for the interview with Sally Armstrong. I read Power Shift, The Longest Revolution, the Massey lecture she gave a few years back, which talks about the women's movement in historical times to present day. The Massey Lecture is given each year in Canada by a thinker or scholar on a topic that is of public interest and is broadcast on CBC Radio. I also read Descent into Chaos, The U.S. and the Disaster in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Central Asia by Ahmed Rashid. It is an account of America's experience in Afghanistan, looking at the rise of the Taliban and the aftermath of the War on Terror, the different groups and factions, as well as countries involved in Afghanistan. I also read The Dogs Are Eating Them Now, Our War in Afghanistan by Canadian journalist Grant Smith. A few fiction titles I have read over the years include The Pearl That Broke Its Shell by Nadia Hashimi, as well as The Kite Runner and A Thousand Splendid Suns by Khaled Hosseini. These books provided a sense of the conflict and its impact on individuals, friends, and family members, painting a portrait of characters who are caught up in events in history and politics. My name is Jenny Kwong for Writer's Block on CJSW 90.9 FM in Calgary. Today, I'm speaking with Kate Black about her new book, Big Mall. So, welcome, Kate.
Thanks so much for having me, Jenny.
And so, what made you want to write about West Edmonton Mall?
Yeah, so I actually didn't get the idea to write about West Edmonton Mall until I left Edmonton and moved to Vancouver. I realized that a lot of people, or most people, only knew Edmonton for its mall or knew Alberta for its mall. And I just started my master's in creative writing at UBC. And I was thinking about what kind of book projects I could work on or things I could write about. And I thought it was interesting that, to my knowledge, no one had written like a full book-length work of literary nonfiction on West Edmonton Mall. So not just, you know, retelling facts about what happened there, but really doing what literary writing does well and ask, what does it mean to grow up in a space like this? Not just in and around the mall, but all the conditions that created the mall too. Like, how are we affected by capitalism and consumerism and structures dedicated to that? So the more I thought about it, the more interesting it became. And yeah, I just had to write a book about it.
And so how do you go about researching the book?
So most of my research was done using library archives, mostly of news stories. So the book really aims to tell a social history of West Edmonton Mall, but it also turns an eye towards other malls across the world as well. So I guess I had already figured out the broad chapters that I'd be working on themes like animals in malls, accidents in malls. And I just got to work typing that into the search bar using my library's like access to articles. Just spent hours combing through those and pulling out threads that felt interesting.
So West Edmonton Mall is the big draw to Edmonton that many people know about, even though they might not have been there because of the commercials over the years that have been on TV. And so that it seems that's what Edmonton is known for, aside from the hockey team.
Yeah, the Oilers, yeah.
Yeah. So, and so tell me more about the mall itself and I guess the how it started and I guess some of the social history of the mall.
Yeah. So let me think back. So the mall was first built in Edmonton in, oh man, I don't have the book in front of me. I believe it was 1982. Hopefully I'm not messing up the year on that. But it was built by the Gurmesian family. They're Iranian immigrants to Edmonton. And they basically had this vision for a first-of-its-kind world-class mall that would draw people from around the world, not just to shop, but to experience things, basically imagining what if people could come to Edmonton instead of going to somewhere like Disneyland to entertain their family. So the mall was built in phases, and each of the phases introduced something new and interesting into the structure. So, of course, there's all of the stores, huge department stores anchoring either side of it. But throughout its construction, there was also a dolphin tank added, an amusement park called Galaxyland with roller coasters in it. At the time, the world's largest indoor water park. And so over the decades since the mall's been built, a lot of fascinating things have happened within those structures. So there are no longer dolphins in the mall, but now there are sea lions. And there's a whole aquarium in the basement of the mall, and that's come with its own host of controversy. There's been really famous people have come to the mall, like Britney Spears has performed on a stage there. And then one of the most, I guess, famous events that happened in the mall's history was the Mindbender roller coaster in Galaxyland crashed in the 80s, and three people lost their lives through that. So that, for anyone from Edmonton, that's a pretty definitive moment in not just the mall's history, but Edmonton's history. And I think events like that cause the mall to have a sort of aura over people that have lived there. So those are just a few of the things that stick out for me as a part of the mall's history.
And you looked at malls in other parts of the world. And so how did you find out about that?
Yeah, I found a lot of malls have used West Edmonton Mall as a blueprint. So, of course, there's the Mall of America. That is owned by the 555 Corporation, the same people that own West Edmonton Mall. And so you'll see very similar features there. They don't have a water park, but they do have roller coasters. And I noticed that in a lot of other malls around the world, integrating features that make it not just about shopping, but about having real experiences. Even strangely so. So one mall that I write about, I believe it's in Dubai, they have a full-on ski slope inside. So you can imagine how strange that is. In the desert, you can go into a mall to go skiing. And then in Asia, there's a lot of giant malls that have completely dwarfed West Edmonton Mall that make it no longer the largest mall in the world. And they also have really interesting features inside too, like zoos, other kinds of attractions, amusement parks. So yeah, the mall is really expanding to other places in the world.
And I guess the mall has changed over the years with different stores coming and going, and I guess whole generations spending time away from the home, but still finding a social place, but also a commercial place to be at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's such an important point to bring up, that for a lot of people, the mall isn't just a place to go shopping, but it's a place to, commune with people, like walk with friends. Like we've probably all seen groups of seniors walking the mall, and especially in places like Canada where our climate can be so extreme, it's a pretty sheltered and accessible place for people to get together.
Okay. And I guess with this book, it's was released this week. This interview will air in the middle of March, but you launched it this week in mid-February, and so how's it been received so far?
Yeah, so it just came out this week, so it's really interesting seeing the reception start to bubble up. Just before we got on the line, I saw that a positive review came out in the Washington Post, which is crazy to think that they read it. So that was really flattering. But otherwise, it's been really awesome to hear how people have received it, especially from Edmonton. I've had a few people reach out to me over the past couple of days and say things like the book puts words to feelings that they didn't know anyone else had, like about the place that we're from. And then having people from places that aren't in Edmonton say similar things, just that maybe I was able to mirror something about how they feel about living during capitalism or how they feel about their own local mall. And that's really just, I think, the goal of any writer, any artist. Like, you want to be able to capture some true feeling and connect to people across that. So that's felt awesome so far.
All right. I think we're at the end of the interview. Anything else to say before we wrap up?
No, I think that was great. I think the only thing to add is that I will be coming to Calgary at the end of March for a book launch at Shelf Life Books. I'm still working out the dates and details, but if you watch my social media, I'm on Twitter, or if you look at Shelf Life social media, you will be able to find out, yeah, when that will be happening.
Okay. And we've been talking with Kate Black about her new book, Big Ma, looking at the social aspects of West Edmonton Mall. So thank you, Kate, for your time.
Thank you so much, Jenny.
Hi, my name is Jenny, and that was my interview with Kate Black about her book, Big Mall, which looks at West Edmonton Mall and other mega malls around the world. The Calgary launch of Big Mall will be at Shelf Life Books on March 27th, which is a Wednesday at 7 p.m. Other events happening in town include Single Onion, which will have their monthly event at Shelf Life on March 21st, Thursday. The event celebrates Indigenous poets. Cobra Collins is a mixed Indigenous and Métis poet. She represented the city at the Canadian Festival of Spoken Word. Francine Cunningham is the current writer-in-residence at the University of Calgary. She is a member of the Saddle Lake Cree Nation in Alberta and grew up in Calgary, Edmonton, and the 100 Mile House in BC. Her book of poems, On/Me, was nominated for the BC Yukon Book Prize. Henry Hebbeshield is a Blackfoot reader and writer for Kainai Nation and currently lives in Treaty 7 territory. His writing has appeared in various publications such as Joyland and the Capilano Review. Tapsia Kilubuk is a Nunavummiq person of Nunavut who raises children whilst raising hell. There will also be a book launch for Norma by Sarah Mintz, which is a book about being a widow and dealing with weirdos online and off. It's a novel written by Sarah Mintz, who is a graduate of the English MA program at the University of Regina. The book launch is at Shelf Life Books on March 27th, which is a Tuesday. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the interviews that I've done over the past couple of years on Writer's Block. It's been a joy to host this show along with my co-host who has left the program. And for the past few months, I've been hosting solo, and it's been an interesting journey throughout the 2 years and the last few months working on this program. The program for April, it will be the last one I will be doing for a while on the station. I will be taking a break from my hosting duties at CJSW, taking some time for myself, resting, and thinking up new plans and ideas for art and writing projects on my own. So for more information about this program and other podcasts on the station, check out the website at cjsw.com/podcast. Stay tuned for the next show, Poetry Joint. And that's it for me. Thanks. Bye.